Wait a minute. That's not our regular opening. Hi, this is your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and we'll get to the regular part of the show, but we had an interview just kind of drop in our laps with the creator of the burlesque troupe, the La La's, who's got a new comic coming out, and I'd like you to guys, and girls, and mutants, and whatever, to know about it, and go take a look at it. So here's that interview, and after the interview, we'll get back to the regular shenanigans and silliness and all that stuff. I have been to see a burlesque show a few months ago for the La La's.
Yes.
And I talked about it on this here podcast, and now they are stepping into my world. I stepped into their world. Now they're stepping into my world because they're coming out with a gosh darn comic book, and I have the founder and creator and owner of the La La's, Aaron Lamont. Aaron,
yes.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Why don't you talk a little about where the La La's come from and how they started?
Sure. The La La's, before all of that ever happened, you know, I was 7 years old and took a tap class, and I was just basically stuck. You know, I just knew I wanted to be a dancer. And then when I started dancing, I knew that I wanted to be a choreographer. I love creating. I love being in charge. I love hiring dancers. So I moved to LA, you know, working in TV and film, being a choreographer, loving life. As it turns out, I met my husband, and while we were living together, we were living in Manhattan Beach and walked down, you know, pre-kids. We went to happy hour all the time and, you know, slept in. So it was a Friday happy hour, and we saw a burlesque show. And to me, being a choreographer, I'm like, oh my gosh, I could totally do this, and I could knock it out of the park, and I would kill it. I could do this better. So I called the owner a couple of days later, and I lied and said I have this big show and you should see it. And then he's like, okay, let's audition. And I hired a couple girlfriends that I was dancing with just from other jobs. And I said, hey, want to just do a gig? It's super chill, very fun, get paid a little bit of money, and you call it a night. And the La La's were born. So that was about 6 years ago now. And since then, you know, the first 2 years, it wasn't really a normal job. Well, it's not really a normal job anyway, but it wasn't a full-time gig. It wasn't, you know, we were doing gigs here and there, but I was working more in the other half of my job, which is, you know, TV and freelance. And so then all of a sudden it got a little serious and we started touring. We traveled the world performing classic rock themed comedic burlesque shows. So we're pretty lucky and we're very busy, and I'm just so thankful for it all. So that's kind of how we got started, per se.
And you came through Minneapolis.
Yes.
In the fall. That's where I got to see you.
Yes.
And you guys put on a show. It's about an hour and a half to 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
You've got merch, really a fun show. And if people haven't seen burlesque, what's the basic idea of burlesque?
Sure. Well, to some it can be very intimidating because you immediately maybe go to naked girls and strippers. So that's not what burlesque is about at all. It's, you know, my parents love the show. We've had people celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary sitting up front, like hooting and hollering. It's all about comedy to me. And, you know, each show is completely customized. So I have these women who are in my group, and my goal is to have the audience laughing the entire time. So surprisingly enough, 3/4 of our audience are actually couples on a date night. So it's a very non-intimidating, we're not blue steel sexy, we're not trying to like show the goods, you know, so, you know, everybody hates us. It's more just trying to like celebrate and respect women and, you know, empower women and say all of these dancers come from all walks of life. They all work in TV. They all grind in LA every day. But this is their chance to step on stage and say, this is my personality. This is who I am. And it comes out in my burlesque solo. And you happen to be cracking up at it. So that's kind of like, that's kind of my take on burlesque. It's all about comedy and just chilling out. You know, it's not so serious.
That was one of the things that I've always found interesting. My first burlesque show was actually not a burlesque show. I saw the world famous Pattani Sisters.
Okay.
When they were dancing for Low Straitjackets.
Okay.
And then I started digging into the history, mm-hmm. because I'm a nerd like that.
Sure.
The whole podcast here is me talking about comic book history. And seeing your group, the thing that I really enjoyed is each person had a personality that came through in their act.
Yes.
It wasn't just, okay, they're going to come out, they're going to do their bit. It was each person had a personality. Now, how big a group is it? Because I think there were five in Minneapolis?
Yes. I have a total of 9 girls, but they rotate in and out. So every show has a different cast, per se, out of those 9 women.
And are you currently on tour?
Yes. We just got back from Hawaii, and now we were in L.A. last week, and then next week we go to Louisiana, and then we're in L.A. for a couple more weeks, and then we go to – where do we go? We go to New York.
And you've got a comic book of all things.
Yes,
now,
we do.
Where did the idea for turning a burlesque show into a comic book come from?
Well, I must say that – it was absolutely not my idea at all initially, because I think the idea got planted about 3 years ago, and the Lala's booking agent, who does the contracts and, you know, the paperwork for each show, said, "Hey, I have a connection in New York. Would you ever consider doing a comic book?" I'm like, that's crazy. Like, I don't think so. I don't know. And so it initially sparked my interest because of the costumes, because everything we make is handmade. I toil and labor and create and draw, and now I have an assistant who is a rock star who makes everything come to life. So everything's like hand-glued, stoned, super like meticulous. I'm like, that would be really cool in a comic book costume, because I just feel like everyone would just represent their own personality. And so that kind of stuck. And 6 months later, then I looked at the girls on stage, and, you know, the show you saw in Minneapolis, you know, I could maybe quote back the acts that you saw, but, you know, half of them are probably not in our current show. And I'm like, these girls they have like a superpower over the audience. One girl does this hair whip thing that's crazy. The other shakes her butt crazy. The other does this swivelly, snaky thing through the audience. And so then maybe another 6 months later, I'm thinking still, I'm like, you know, no matter what these girls do in an act, their personality always comes through and they always do the same thing. And so then it got a little bit more serious. And then I flew to New York, and then we had a couple meetings. And then a year later, it was a couple lawyers. And now it's almost done. So now there's a comic book, and I can't even imagine my life without it.
Now, is this only going to be available through the website? Or are you going to be distributing it through Diamond Distribution and getting it into comic shops all over the U.S. and everywhere else?
Distribution. When I'm in, I'm in. So this is not an online thing. It's going to be something that I want to hold and put on paper and just get to the world, because I feel like these women will be portrayed in the book as they are in real life. I mean, call me crazy. Are there a lot of other comic books that do that? Like, that is so cool. You can go, you can read this book, and then you can go see the show, and then you're like, holy cow, Mish does the same thing in the book that she does in the show. It's just, it's so relatable, and like, it's translating, and it's kind of taking on a life of its own, and it's just, it's so damn cool. I'm so excited.
The other thing that I think is really cool is you'll have these at the show, so people who probably... You know, you talked about the diversity of audience.
Sure.
One of the things I've learned is with all the movies and everything, it's a little different.
Sure.
But people will still say, they still publish comic books?
Absolutely. I feel like I'm kind of old school in that manner. I want to hold it in my hand. So I don't even know. We're now talking about doing PDFs of it, which is great. But I just kind of want to stick to good old print.
And you mentioned on the website that you've got artists who've done other work. Do you have any names of the artists that you could toss out for fans?
I cannot. I hired them as ghostwriters right now. Maybe that'll change once it's done, but right now it's on lockdown, so I cannot. I already asked again, so there's not much I can do. But
well, for now, where can people get information on the comic?
So you can go to our website, thelalas.com, and there's a link to our comic book. So then you can see, you know, an example of a page, rough draft. You can see, you know, our faces compared to our comic book faces and see the similarities. And, you know, if you're a super Lalas fan and have seen a couple shows, you'll see the costumes and who's doing what with what act. So it's pretty cool.
Well, that's pretty amazing. I'm glad I've been able to get you in front of the fans. And thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Once again, to Crazy Comics and Stories, it's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
So did you think of it?
Yes, I did. The comic we were discussing in the last podcast that was a parody of the Image stuff done by Hilary Barta was stupid.
Well, I know it was stupid, but what was the name of it?
Stupid.
Yes, we've established that.
No, the name of the comic was Stupid.
Well, what was
stupid
it? You can
comics.
Tell us. Yeah, they're all stupid.
Stupid comics. That was the title of the comic.
And, of course, later on that day, we get a email from our even... Well, he appeared briefly during WrestleMania, Butch. And, of course, he said, in addition to Blue Devil and... Giffith and Mattia's Justice League, Butch recommends Dr. Grave, Big Blown Baby, Doug Mankey's Martian Manhunter Issues, Martin's Chocos, John Byrne's Cosmetically Aware Joke, The Fantastic Four Roast, Not Bran Eck, Dirk McGurk's Book Reports, and Obnoxious the Clown's columns in Crazy Magazine, which I mentioned, Crazy. Bring Me the Head of Boba Fett. What If Number 34, which we talked about, Reg Fleming, World's Toughest Mailman, Damage Control, Gru, which we went on for quite a bit, Captain Carrot and His Amazing Zoo Crew, Sea Bear
which
and
I
Grizzly Shark and Freaks of the Heartland. But, we should have had Butch on that show, definitely. But I'm happy to say we have the lovely and talented Jin Wicked with us. How are you doing, Jin?
Oh, boy, do you really want me to answer that?
Well, actually, what I'm curious is we talked the last podcast about our adventure getting a car. How's the new car treating you?
It's pretty good. We're gonna keep it fairly anonymous. It's a small subcompact car. That's as much as I want to say.
I didn't mention where we went or what we
I can, I can, I have to say, I can almost parallel park this bitch. That's kind of nice, living in the city. I'm getting better at it. It's strange, you know. I don't know. You guys were talking about me while I wasn't here.
Damn straight.
All right. Well, Joe was kind enough to pick me up and take me to buy a car a little over a week ago. And I've had a lot of firsts, you know, in the last year and a half. You know, this is the first car I've bought without a co-signer. I actually have enough credit and everything to get it on my own, and it's the first new car I've ever owned. New car, not a fancy one, but it's a new car. It's got push button everything, which is really strange. So, you know, there's no key.
I've heard of those.
Yeah, so it's strange, but you know, it's growing on me. It was odd at first, but
have a garage, do you?
No, I do not. So it's a gas zipper. You know, it gets pretty good mileage. Especially compared to the truck, but in general, it gets good mileage, and it's going to be much better. I needed a new vehicle anyway because the truck really doesn't work for hauling my stuff to shows. Once I started doing shows again, especially my convention trunk, which if you haven't seen it, is a antique steamer trunk that I use as a display. It's kind of bulky. So, you know, it's going to be more appropriate for what I need, and, you know, hopefully it'll last me until I can pay it off, so it's working out pretty good. Thanks for taking both my freaking and geeking from me right out the gate.
Absolutely. Well, the question still is, what did you do with your truck?
I'm still in the process of trying to get rid of the truck, so.
Somebody suggested there's charity groups that will come and get it.
Yeah, I'll do that as a last resort. I desperately need to get some cash for it if I can, so.
Sure.
Now, what we talked about last week was funny books. And what I thought we could talk about before we do our review, if you know of any, what do you think are funny web strips and funny comic strips in the newspaper? Because web strips is a world I don't know that much about. And when I look at the – we talked a little about comic strips. I really like zits. And
especially popping them.
And that's about it.
I'm done adulting. Let's be mermaids.
Let me see. Let me check my bookmarks here. Webcomics. Oh, there we go. Well, I like Hark a Vagrant by Kate Beaton. And that's going to be, let me check the address, harkavagrant.com. So she actually is pretty well known at this point, and which is fun because I remember when she kind of first came on the webcomic scene a few years ago. But she makes kind of a historical comics, so they're based on, like, you know, literature or historical figures, a lot of stuff like that. Hers are really clever. She's got a really adorable art style. Who else can I recommend? I don't read a lot of comics anymore. My friend Randy Milholland, somethingpositive.net. And, man, I don't know. You just sprung this on me out of nowhere.
That's what we do.
Yeah,
fair. He did send a Gmail. Who the hell reads Gmail anyways?
Oh, my God, he sends me so much mail. Do you have any
I don't send mail anymore.
Like, I had to stop syncing it to my phone because I have so much email. It's just crashing the phone.
Well, we do have a review that Joe and I have read.
Okay.
And it's a book that came out years ago and is now available once again. It is called Through the Habit Trails.
Yeah, it's a collection of darkly humorous tales. It chronicles a nameless protagonist as he struggles with a... what would you call it? A drudger?
A cubicle life.
Yeah. The stories
and it's by Jeff Nicholson.
Are... I'm trying to read his review. Kafka-esque?
Kafka-esque.
Yeah, vignettes. Portrayed in a striking black and white drawings, they offer eerie perspectives on the rigors of everyday life. I know Jeff Nicholson from Ultra Klutz, which I collected, Father and Son. He's also done Lost Laughter and Colonia. And if I'm understanding this right, Corey, this has been out of print.
Yes, this has been out of print for a long time. It started as a short story in a series called Taboo. Taboo was one of the things during the late 80s, early 90s self-publishing boom where Stephen Bissett, who was one of the artists on Alamore Swamp Thing, wanted to do a horror anthology. And he gathered together new and old creators. There's Neil Gaiman stories in there. The Alan Moore's From Hell started in there. And the early stories in Through the Habit Trails was in there. After Taboo ended, he took those, drew a lot more, and put it out as a book. And this book has all of them collected kind of for the first time. Joe, what did you think of it?
Well, I skipped over the... There was a introduction and then a long essay by Steve Bissett. I did catch something where they said, when you read this, you either have to have a sense of humor, otherwise you'll have a sense of despair. And they even talk a bit about that where one of the reviewers online talks that this isn't so much a horror, but more a horrific book as the introduction would suggest. I don't know if this is one of those you sit down and want to necessarily read through the entire book at once. It might be overwhelming. Nevertheless, I got about halfway through. It's got the things that I like about it. I mean, the art style is clean. The protagonist is recognizable. The lettering is fine. And it's very easy to read along. It's not going real fancy with trying to lay out things so you're confused as to which column to read next or which panel to go to. Having never worked a cubicle job, a lot of this probably escapes me. But some of it relates to almost what job you go to. There was one title or one chapter called Escape Number One, which he talks about what he does on his days off. And really, I think all of us can relate to that when you actually have days off. Corey, of course, using his day off to slam dunk the last podcast together in a mere 14 hours.
Four. It was only four.
Oh, yeah, but it took you 14 hours to figure out that it was stupid. So, but the even my job TSA, I mean, my escape is 9 years from now. Folks, you got 9 years of these here podcasts before I retire and hit the road. I've got people that I work with at TSA. They look at college. They're doing degrees. They say, oh, I'm going to have my degree in X number of months. Some people, it's I got a certain amount of money and I'm out of here. Other people are, oh, they want to win the lottery. That's their escape, you know, impossible or possible. And there are some people who just kind of, I'm here for life. What's that? I don't know. So regardless of what your job is, unless, of course, you happen to be a comic shop owner, which is, I think, what do they call it? The Widowmaker?
Yes.
Even that is like, when I had the shop, it was like, how do I get out of this? There was a time in the last year of Hot Comics when it was just, things were piling up. It just wasn't a joy to work. And I mean, I stayed up at night thinking, how the hell do I get out of this without bankrupting myself and my family? And I was fortuitous because I found someone to actually buy the shop, which was kind of cool. So that's how I got out of that. In case of Crazy Comics, it wasn't that big of an endeavor. We just kind of arranged to have the passengers. So I'm mixing my jobs. Well, actually, we shipped them over to, most of them went over to the source. So I arranged a thing with Nick to give out free discount cards. And if we gave copies of their list to everybody, and I made sure that I wasn't ordering things 2 months in advance, so I didn't have a lot of previews crap coming in. I had a little bit of a sidebar, but you see such memories that come up. I mean, as you're reading this book through the habit trail, you think, well, how does this relate to me? Granted, I don't think much about gerbils scurrying across the floor, and I've never, you know, pickled myself so hard that's how I get through life. But again, it's a I wouldn't say challenging, but a very interesting read. I was enjoying myself as I was reading through it. I think the chapter I had to stop on, if I can get the computer to cooperate, right before the podcast, he was just talking about the different women that he meets in the office and how he relates to them and whether he could find himself going out with them. Almost a very cynical look at it, but I don't know. Corey, you've worked a cubicle life. How does this book relate for you?
First, I remember this book when it first came out, and I really enjoyed it back then. And that was before I started working in the business world. Because, just like you said, there's a lot of it that relates to any sort of job, even the part about how they install a spigot in him to drain juice. And that's, of course, an allegory for how any job you have is going to be taking from you. It's taking. It takes from you without giving back. But also, there's all sorts of allegory there where, you know, the protagonist talks about how the company reminds me that it's their juice. It's just in my body right now. Much like for many artists or writers or other creators, when they go to work for a company, they don't own what they're creating. It's, you know, when you work on Superman, they will give you the art back, but they tell you this, this is our art. We are just letting you have it back. You don't keep the copyright. They own what you've done. And I've talked about at Marvel, legally, Brian Michael Bendis has never written a thing for Marvel. Everything at Marvel has been written by Marvel Characters Incorporated. Any company you work for, when I worked for a medical company, and I was creating all of the training, none of that training was mine. It's not like I could take this training I did on retirement and say, this is mine, and take it with me when I left. I created it for them. They own it, et cetera, et cetera. This has a lot of allegorical stuff. Things like, you know, there were the gerbils that went through for entertainment. And at the job I have now, they do a lot of things to, quote, entertain us. Oh, you know, it's spring, so everybody gets a vase with three flowers in it.
Oh, is that what that picture was on your Instagram?
Yeah.
I was like, why the hell are you posting a picture of flowers?
They gave us all flowers on a Monday. And then when I came in the next Monday, the flowers, the vase, all of it, gone as if it was never there. It was just there to distract us, to make us feel like we belonged. I'm moving yet again tomorrow. One of the things that companies will do, they move you around so that you never feel a sense of permanence. You never feel like – and this book is really good at taking those ideas and doing them in a very dark, foreboding way. The one chapter that really was disturbing was the one person who was at the job so much that eventually he went into one of the gerbil cages and lived. And there are times it feels like that at a job where I'm here all the time. This is my whole life. I have nothing outside of here. I might as well just surrender to that. It really gets into those dark fears and the dark feelings that you get working in a job like this. Joe and I talked about Dilbert last time. Dilbert, I've never much cared for, not just because the art is bad, but because it kind of makes it where, you know, all of the workers are brilliant and all of the bosses are terrible, and that's just the way it is, and you need to laugh because it's funny. Through the Habit Trails is no, the company is the one that's ripping away your soul and ripping away your life, and you need to be aware of this. Nicholson's art is almost cartoonish, which allows a distance so that you're – if the art was more realistic, the things he showed would be nightmarish. But because it's more cartoonish, it gives you a bit of distance and so that it's not as – soul-crushing when you read it. But if they learn to put big glass what are they, Joe? They're big glass buckets or something.
Helmets, pickle jars.
Helmets. You know, jars. Big glass jars, and they fill it full of beer so that they're drunk all the time at the job so that they don't have to think about how the drudgery is affecting them. So that their heads almost become pickled. I can see how some people would find it funny, but as someone who's in that world, to me, this was like reading my worst nightmare on a page. Story-wise, it's small vignettes. It's little. Some of them are just one page. Some of them are more. Some of them are longer. But in the end, it holds together. It's a really, really excellent book. That I, like Joe said, you can't read it all at once. There's just too much there. Joe, buy, borrow, or ignore?
Oh, I'm going to buy this one.
I have a copy, but my copy doesn't have everything. There's new stuff in it because it goes into what happened after. So I am definitely going to buy this when it comes out. And I thought what we could talk about, because this is a book that's been out of print for probably over 20 years. Joe? Jen?
Huh.
What?
What are some books or strips or web strips that you think, you know, they're not in print right now, you can't get them, that need to be available to modern readers?
That'd be hard for me.
I don't everything, have any idea.
Yeah, everything that, it's one of those, it's kind of a chicken egg thing because until I hear it's being printed, it's not like I recognize I miss it. I've got to finish the wonderful Fangraphic collection of P. peanuts because I lapsed collecting them all. I want to get the hardcovers. I have all the Bloom County, the Outland. I think I need the Opus one to have all of his stuff. I've got the complete Farside. I've got complete Dan Heck from Mad. I've got...
Don't you mean Don Martin?
Don Martin, yeah.
I don't think Don Heck ever worked for Mad.
Well, we don't know that yet. It could,
yes,
it could,
I
it
do.
It could happen. Yeah, that's true. You know everything.
Well,
all the fun out of life.
Well, and Don Heck's
again,
not with us anymore.
Kelvin and Hobbes, Farside. I mean, if it's a complete set, I'd probably pick that up. And it really... And there's even some things like I've got Little Folks, which was Charles Schultz's strip that he ran in the St. Paul Pioneer Press that they paid him squat for. And that was before he went off to do Peanuts. They published a book of his Christian cartoons, which were kind of like Peanuts, but they were elongated teenagers. Little Abner is going to be finished. I've got the Kitchen Press stuff where they just reprinted the strips. And then is it Dark Horse that was reprinting it? Again?
Dark Horse reprinted some of the Sunday strips. They actually reprinted all the ones that Frank Frazetta drew.
Okay. And I have those somewhere.
Which are beautiful.
Wasn't somebody republishing it, but they were putting the Sunday strips? They're just doing it chronologically, which means the Sunday strips, which had their own continuity, kind of threw the weekly strips off.
Yes, IDW is doing that, and it kind of upset me because, like you, I have all of the Kitchen Sink volumes.
Which never finished because Kitchen Sink went out of business.
But Kitchen Sink was going to go back and do the Sunday strips as separate books. Mm. So I don't want to have to buy the strips all over again just to get the Sunday strips.
Yeah. I've got Popeye. IDW is fantastic, too, because they are constantly coming up with strips that I wasn't even aware of. You mentioned in the email Barnaby.
Yes.
That would be one I would love to get.
Now, Fantagraphics is reprinting Barnaby, which I remember reading. They had them in, like, the Peanut-style books when I was a kid. And Barnaby was drawn by Crockett Johnson, who most people know from the Harold and the Purple Crayon books. But as a cartoonist, Barnaby was, in many ways, kind of a precursor to Calvin and Hobbes, because it was about a young boy and his guardian angel, who wasn't exactly, you know, the best at things, having adventures.
Oh, is that guy that's, like, kind of round and he's got a cigar?
Yes.
Oh, I've seen that. Hey, I know what you're talking about. Mark it on the motherfucking calendar.
All right. For us, it was April 4th, pod drop. No, wait a minute. What day is it? April 11th.
Today's the 11th.
Yeah, pod drop. Wow, you're 18. Away.
No, see, we've done two podcasts, so we're really... you're lucky, Jen. I talked to Corey less than, you know, like 24 hours ago doing this again, so I'm having, like, a major deja vu moments here.
Yeah, thank God nobody talks to me but once a week. It's probably for the best.
Nice for me, huh?
I'm sorry, I haven't been very present.
Well, we were busy. I mean, getting you mobile was more important than potting.
Sure, sure.
And, you know, the WrestleMania story wouldn't have been as funny if we would have got your version of it.
Probably not.
I have a list of some of the comics I would like to see back in print, and comics that should be kind of, they should be in print all the time, in my opinion. The first one is Sam and Max, which I imagine most people, when they hear Sam and Max Freelance Police, think of the video game. But it started as a comic, one of the funniest goddamn comics ever printed, to the point where when they put out the trade paperback in the 90s, my son got really hooked on the game. And when he was done with the game, I said, well, you might want to read this comic. There's a Sam and Max comic? Is it based on the game? No, the other way around. But I can't believe Sam and Max is out of print. Joe, do you remember Sam and Max?
It's funny you mention that, because I just sold a copy of the 1989 Kimiko, the Sam and Max Freelance Police Special. And I doesn't really have a collectability because nobody's really looking for it, but it's just something I put on eBay, and it lasted a month or so, and poof, it's gone.
I found out a few months ago that the Kirby Fourth World Omnibuses, those hardcovers, and then they put them out as paperbacks.
Omnibuses.
They are all out of print. And that is a crime against humanity. Those books should always be in print. And the funny thing is, every time DC goes, oh, you know, they're sold out, nobody wants them, within a year or so, they're going for crazy, stupid money on eBay. Retailers are saying, we really need this stuff. And because they keep going back and using the characters, it's like, oh, crap, we better put this stuff out. Marvel's Tomb of Dracula. And one of the reasons I think this should always stay in print.
Omnibuy.
Well, they've got the two. They did it in two omnibuy. Omnibuses.
There you go.
Omnibums.
But this is another book that Marvel just did not understand the demand for. Because in the late 90s, when there was a money crunch, Marvel was in bankruptcy, they only were allotted so much money, they announced a bunch of essentials, and then they found out they wouldn't have enough money to print all of them, so the one that they didn't print was Tomb of Dracula. However, when the orders came in, it had sold double of all of the others.
Corey, did you get Champions Masterpiece?
No, because I have the two trade paperbacks that reprinted.
See, I wanted to ask, because this is something that always drives me nuts, is when you get something and it's not complete. And, you know, I've got Champions Classic number one. For some reason, never picked up number two, and now the Masterpiece is out. And I'm like, do I want to just sell this and get the Masterpiece? But I'm like, you know what? Number two's out of print already. I can get it on eBay easy enough, but I didn't know if it would have everything in it. You know, and the only thing I see they don't collect, and I don't know if it's really germane to it, is there was like an Incredible Hulk annual where I think Iceman and Angel teamed up, which was kind of like, oh yeah, Champions will never get together.
No, what it is, there was a crossover with... How was it? Supervillain team up.
Avengers.
And then after it ended, they did a two-parter in Spectacular Spider-Man that tied up all the loose ends.
So then that was just something, the Hulk thing was just out of the blue. It really had nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, it was okay. We're going to use Iron Man, Iceman and Angel.
Yeah, one more chance for Byrne to draw it.
Yeah. But Tomb of Dracula, those were one of Marvel's highest-selling essentials. They're out of print. The Omnibuy are out of print. The trade paperbacks are out of print. And I think it's one of those... I think Tomb of Dracula is a book that no matter when it comes out, it's still readable because it wasn't really tied in with the 70s. It was really written in kind of a timeless way. Here's a book that's out of print that, Joe, once I tell you it's out of print, your jaw will drop.
Uh-oh.
Mage.
No, I know it's out of print because I've been looking for it. I think I have the first series, and I think I have all of the second series that Image published, but I would prefer just to have it in a book form.
I have both of the Image hardcovers that came out, and of course the individual issues because, well, Mage is my favorite comic series, he said, looking at his Mage tattoo.
I still have a Mage t-shirt, although it's getting a little crackly the way the thing will be on it. I wore that once to the Renaissance Fest. And the only thing, you know, I had black pants, black shirt, I had a bit of a beard, and I wore glasses and a baseball cap. And one guy noticed, he looked, that's Mage, right? I said, the only thing I thought about getting was like a goal or like a glow in the dark wiffle bat to carry with, but I couldn't find one in time to go. But that was, I still have the shirt. I'd like to get another one because, like I said, mine's starting to crack out just from wearing it.
I have the original shirt. I have, after Mage ended, they put out a sequel shirt that had the characters in black silhouette and then a circle with all of the colors, and it was What Color Will Magic Be Next Time, Mage 2 coming, and of course it took 15 goddamn years, and now it's been more than 15 years since Mage 2 ended, but I was amazed to see that they are out of print, because it's one of those books that you hear about all the time, so hopefully they get that back in print.
There. I just ordered Champions number 2 off eBay.
There we
now
go.
I'm complete.
I'm going to tie into one of the things Butch said, the Giffen and DeMatteis JLA.
Oh.
I think that should always be in print. Joe, what's special about the Giffen and DeMatteis JLA?
You guys hear me drawing?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I think it's kind of cool. Bwah! That's all I can remember. Boy, that and Oreos.
The Giffen and DeMatteis JLA, after Crisis on Infinite Earths, they gave them the Justice League. And rather than have it be kind of a standard superhero book, it was more of a situation comedy. But it wasn't making fun of the heroes. They would just put the heroes in odd, funny situations. And it wasn't all jokes. It wasn't all humor. There were serious stories sprinkled in throughout. And it was so popular that at one point there were 3 Justice League books.
And it actually made Maxwell Lord a fun character as opposed to the asshole they turned him into later.
It was one of those books where all of the characters in it you really liked. Batman.
You
know, one of the darkest, most serious characters still has the funniest sequence in any comic, any superhero comic, when he and Guy Gardner finally duke it out. One punch. Last I saw the page, that page is going for thousands of dollars.
Well, he also had a great fight with another series that's totally out of print. Hitman.
Oh, what's that? Yes.
And I've talked about that before, where Hitman, in order to impress a girl, read the girl's mind and found out she likes curry. So after the dinner and a few peeks with his x-ray vision on her, he's walking home and, oh man, that curry is, and he hears batarang. What? Ducks. Flunk. And he's running. Oh shit. Didn't say that because I think it was still semi-code. Turns around a corner and Batman's there. Nails him. Oof! Right in the stomach and goes, oh god, the curry. All over Batman's uniform, and Batman just looks at him with his jaw for a couple seconds, and then pow, just hit me. I don't think.
What the flame of blue hell is going on?
I ran out of Bristol. I'm sorry. I had to open the bin and get a new one.
It sounds like you're drumming.
Okay. All the papers are in bins.
Another book I have on my list of things that need to be in print, one of which I think is probably going to go into print, Don McGregor's run on the Black Panther, with the Black Panther movie coming out, and Black Panther number 1 being not just the biggest selling book for this month, but the biggest selling by a lot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I heard it sold out. I still got my copy. I actually sold the Kirby Black Panther a while back on eBay. Guy didn't even ask, just boom, bought it. So people are picking those babies up.
But also Killraven by Don McGregor, I think, should stay in print.
I could even throw the Linsner one that he did.
No.
Yeah, throw it all. Make it complete.
They've got that in the Essential. Joe, have you tried to read it?
I have a copy of it somewhere.
It's pretty.
It is.
It makes no fucking sense at all.
What do you want? Prettier sense?
If you go back to Don McGregor's Killraven, it was drawn by P. Craig Russell. No one drew comics prettier in the 70s. P. Craig Russell's art was sublime. He did the coloring himself. He did pencils, inks, and colors. And that's why I was kind of sad that they just printed it as an essential, because you miss out on P. Craig Russell's beautiful coloring on that, where there would be sequences that would be dark, and then when the light would come, it would be all this almost a rainbow effect off the page, and he was able to do it with the really shitty printing of the late 70s. But just some beautiful, beautiful mainstream comics art. P. Craig Russell went on to do the Elric books, and then he has actually been doing adaptations of operas ever since, which are amazing. That's another thing I wish would be able to be in print all the time. Not just his Elric adaptations, but the adaptations. He did the adaptation of Wagner's Ring. He's done adaptations of other operas. And in a lot of ways, it's how I've learned to understand opera.
From comic books?
Yes, from P. Craig Russell's adaptations.
I learned mine from What's Opera, Doc, with Bugs Bunny.
Well, there's that, too.
I know,
kill
right?
the wabbit, kill the wabbit.
One of the books I talked about earlier on today I would like to see back in print. I would like to see the Taboo series back in print, because I've got a lot of them, and they still hold up. Because what it was, it would be newer creators and older creators, and some of them mixing with short stories and continued stories. But they were these wonderful trade paperbacks that were like either $10 or $13, depending on. And they did 9 of them. And some of the work in there has gone on, you know, From Hell has gone on. Sweeney Todd by Neil Gaiman has gone on. But there's some short stories in there that you go back and you read them, and they're just brilliant. But because they're only 9, 10, 11 pages long, there's no way to get them back in print other than reprinting the whole thing. Joe, any other series that pop into your head?
Well, when we first started, we were talking comic strips. I would love to see like an omnibus type for better or worse, because I enjoyed that strip. It might be too big to just do in a single one. But then again, Farside, they did 2, and Kelvin and Hobbes was a series of 1. Same thing with Bloom County. IDW, get on it. We need this.
One of the things IDW's done is they've reprinted a lot of the real classic strips, like the Alex Raymond Flash Gordon. I have the kitchen sink versions, but it's been reprinted by different people. And when you go to, especially you go to Golden Age comic book creators, they worshipped that art. You pick up some of the old DC stuff from the 30s and 40s, and they're tracing figures from it and ideas from it, and it's very easy to tell that a lot of comic artists back then were, I can't even say they were influenced, they worshipped that art. The Crazy Cat reprints through Fantagraphics are starting to go out of print, which is kind of a shame. I still need to finish up my collection of those. But Crazy Cat is one of those strips that I think needs to be available for artists and historians. But even at the time, Crazy Cat was one of those strips that a lot of regular people just didn't quite grasp because it was too surrealistic. But it's just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful art. And the simplicity of it, the fact that he was able to get all of those strips out of just 3 characters is mind-boggling. Little Nemo in Slumberland.
Oh, those are
Winsor
beautiful.
McKay.
I love looking at those.
I have the Winsor McKay. I have the Fantagraphics version, which was one of the first times they were actually able to do like laser printing. So the colors really pop off the page. There's also Dreams of the Rare Bit Fiend, which was another Winsor McKay. I don't like it as much as Little Nemo.
Those are good, though.
Yeah, they're good. But with Little Nemo in Slumberland, as he went on, he got more, he played with the page more.
Right.
Whereas Dreams of the Rare Bit Fiend, it was very much, okay, it's the same thing over and over again.
A lot of the Dreams of the Rare Bit Fiend reproductions I've seen are kind of hard to read, too. A lot of them.
Yes.
They're very, very, they're not good quality reproductions, and they're kind of hard to decipher sometimes.
And I wonder if it's because they just don't have good source material anymore.
Possibly.
There are a lot of really early comic strips. Joe talked about Popeye that IDW is doing. And for me, I knew Popeye from the cartoon, and I'd seen some of the later strips, but I'd never seen the original Thimble Theater strips. And they're amazing. They're just amazing, amazing strips.
Joe's fighting me for background noise.
I'm just getting into it.
Joe sounds like he's a drilling stuff.
Yeah, I hear that.
I was just
Am I bothering you? Want me to mute my mic? I can
no,
do
actually,
that.
I'm having fun with this.
God. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. Professional radio.
This isn't radio.
It's podcasting. It is what you make of it.
Here. That was me tearing out a piece of paper from my notebook.
I can join you in that.
You know where my light box is? I need my light box.
Here we go. And I can shred this paper since it's now useless to me.
I have no time. I have to multitask.
Sounded kind of rude.
One of the things about web strips that I find interesting...
You call them web comics? I hate the term web strips.
Okay, web
comics. Nobody says web strips but you. It's weird. Yeah, there you go.
Anything else you want to yell at me about?
I'm not yelling. You'd know if I was yelling.
I'll yell at you!
Christ. One of the things is once they're done, they seem to just disappear.
Yeah, you really have to keep pumping out fresh material to maintain your audience.
But there are some that have come to a conclusion or ended, and I wonder, do many of the artists keep them up in perpetuity, or it's, I'm not going to pay the web hosting for this anymore, and they just disappear?
Well, they usually keep the archives up. It's all the ones that I know of have them still available in some capacity.
Because I know with a lot of modern comic strips in the newspaper, they're not doing collected books anymore. You know, when I remember when my son was young, the Garfield books...
Those
they were coming out.
Paperback ones.
Yeah.
To buy at like the book fair at school.
Oh yeah, yeah. My daughter.
And they sold. They sold tons, but they're not anywhere anymore. I'm a big Doonesbury fan. Not Doonesbury's. The last like 2-3 years of the strip, because it's just Sunday strips. They haven't collected those. And I'm wondering if the golden age of comic reprints is just going to be for older comic strips, and some of the modern ones like Pearls Before Swine and Get Fuzzy and Canderville just aren't going to ever be printed. They're just going to be gone.
Was that a question?
Well, you're such a cheery person, Strode.
It was an observation.
Well, I don't know. There was an awkward silence, and I thought maybe I was supposed to answer or something.
Bringing me down, man.
I know, right? Well, I'm down enough. Don't.
Yeah,
don't need to depress me further.
People start
well, then,
and act like
too bad.
No
it's time for sad news.
Sad news.
Oh, sad news.
Sad news, everybody. Sad news.
This is sad news.
First, Batgirl with Bat... by Cameron Stewart and Babs Tarr, issue 50 was their last issue. They will not be continuing with the rebirth.
Well, it's a good thing we reviewed that bloody paperback a few podcasts ago.
And
better buy it now. It'll be out of print.
And if you're smart, you're going to be watching your previews to see what Babs Tarr does next, because no matter what Babs Tarr does next, I'm buying it. I don't care. That art on Batgirl was amazing. And that's an artist that I want to follow, whatever she does from now on. Over at Marvel, a whole bunch of books have kind of quietly been canceled from the Marvel Now already.
What is Marvel
Red
Now?
Wolf, that was their Secret Wars is over, so now here's a whole bunch of new books.
Oh, okay.
Joe, can you come a little closer to the microphone?
Nope.
Because we could just barely hear
I'm
you.
I'm not saying anything worth listening to.
Well, that's usual. Yes. Red Wolf is over. Star-Lord is over.
Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That one we don't know.
No,
it's
over. If you read issue, they said goodbye, folks.
Okay. Because I know the artist Brett Schoonover said, well, you know, it hasn't been announced that it's canceled yet. Well, I guess it's been announced. So a lot of the Marvel Now books on the lower end are going away. Over at DC, you know, they've announced all the DC Rebirth stuff, and we'll be getting the previews, 3 weeks after the original previews came out. Thanks, DC. But over at Image, they have not really announced any cancellations. IDW is going to be flooding the market with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Ghostbusters, Transformers. But it's looking like Marvel Now did not help a lot of the non-Spider-Man, Avengers, and X-Men books. Two other things that are kind of considered sad news. Marvel is emptying the warehouse of the last of the essentials. So if you go to your comic shop, they probably are loading up on those essentials because Marvel's getting them out of there at 90% off. And one other thing that is being moved out of the warehouse, and Joe, I wanted to get your opinion on this. Marvel is pretty much clearing the warehouse of all of the X-Men hardcovers and trade paperbacks.
That's because they're idiots. Idiots.
And this leads into a tale from the shop. Back in the 90s, one of the problems you had was keeping the Marvel trade paperbacks in print.
Because they were idiots.
Well, why was the reason why in the late 90s it was hard to get Marvel trade paperbacks and hardcovers?
Because they were bankrupt. They didn't, you know, Perlman basically just used it, Marvel, as a personal ATM. If he needed some cash, he just issued some more shares, and then eventually people realized they weren't worth the paper they were printed on, and it was a big fight, and we've talked about that in the past. What was the name? There was a book that covered that. I can't remember. Did I ever borrow that to you?
I think it was called The Comic Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, and it talks about how it was Icon and Perlman duking it out, and then was it Avery Arad ended up winning it? And he was actually the force behind trying to convince Ron Perlman, you know, we can make money by doing movies, which is why they gave away the rights to X-Men, because they just wanted somebody to make a movie that was a hit, and they did. Unfortunately, Marvel at the time, because of what we were talking about, they really didn't care, or it had nothing to do with making money off stocks. There were, like, books would just go out of print, you know, so you just could not come to the shop and buy an X-Men trade, because there were none to be bought, none to be had. And it was proven, yes, Marvel movies can make money, but at the comic shop level, I don't think it helped us one bit. Certainly not like now when they come up with someone, they decide, you know what, we kind of like the way Nick Fury is with Samuel L. Jackson, so we're going to make it that way in the comic book. And Hawkeye, we like the way he is. We're going to get rid of the mask. And Scarlet Witch, we kind of like that too. And, you know, even DC's doing that. They're making their universe more attuned to the movies, which may not be the most brilliant move after the last movie. But, yeah, it just was ugly. It was almost to the point where you're like, you know, if you want it, order it, because I probably won't be able to after I get it originally. And that was before eBay, so it wasn't like he was just going to go on eBay like I just did and bought Champions Volume 2. People got it for $30-$40. I just picked it up for $15, which is actually $5 less than the cover price. On the other hand, if you're looking for, I don't know, you think the graphic novels could be like today's Speculator? I'm going to buy the omnibus because it's going to go out of print right away and go up in value.
I don't think people will speculate on them, but I do think that some of the hardcovers and some of the trade paperbacks have gone up in value. We talked about how the Jack Kirby Eternals omnibus was at one point selling for hundreds of dollars. I don't know if it still is.
It's asking for it, whether they're getting it or not is another thing.
I do know that one of the things that Marvel did during that time period is they let all of the Masterworks go out of print. And on the collector's market, the Masterworks started going for crazy money. And when Marvel got new leadership with Joe Quesada and, Bill Gemmis, one of the things they did is we want to bring all the Masterworks back into print because they are an evergreen. They always sell. Every year, they would sell 1,000 to 2,000 copies of Marvel Masterworks number one, which was The Amazing Spider-Man, first 10 issues. Did I lose Joe?
I should have got a cookie.
I lost Joe.
You lost me a long time ago. Heyo.
But I was talking about how Joe Quesada and Bill Gemmis, one of the things they wanted to do was get all of the Masterworks back in print. Because every year, those Masterworks would sell 1,000 to 2,000 copies. So that's $25,000 that Marvel would make just by making sure that they still had this stuff in print. And it sounds like they've let a lot of stuff go out of print again. I don't know if it's because Perlman is cranking down on the inventory or if Marvel just doesn't think the stuff sells anymore.
Perlman's not in charge anymore. Disney is.
But he still has a lot of say, though.
Perlman?
Yep.
Perlman's out.
Then it's Icon.
Icon, right. He's kind of okay. The guy behind the scenes. And, you know, again, they're probably just looking at it. As long as they make money, and as you mentioned to me years ago at the shop, you never lose money by selling out. You may leave money on the table. You may infuriate the people you're partnered with, but that has nothing to do with you making your quarter.
You know who always does make their quarter, Joe?
A telephone
booth? An awkward
booth?
Segue into the sponsors?
A guy tackling the quarterback?
These guys, our sponsors. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, and your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right. Those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors.
Don't miss out. Consider this your bat signal. MSP Comic Con 2016 is coming. Over 100,000 square feet of comics, over 250 creators, national and local, May 14th and 15th, 2016, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Minnesota State Grandstand. And if you're cool, you'll go to www.mcbacomiccons.com and get advanced tickets so you're not waiting in that line that goes all the way the length of the fairgrounds. You'll be in the short, cool person line who gets in right away and be able to get up to Jin right away and say, "Hi, Jin. I'm one of your fans. I like your artwork. Will you autograph my belly button?"
What, did you import these people from the South somewhere?
Hey,
are you making fun of me? Are you mocking me, Joe?
Well, you know I am. I'm not going to do it when I'm with you helping you get a car. You could hit me. But now that I'm miles away over the internet.
Whatever. I don't care.
We will be at the con podcasting.
Yeah, you will.
And my daughters will be running the charity booth. We got three charities this year. Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, Lupus Foundation, and the local chapter, Bikers for Abuse.
Bikers for Abuse? This is Bikers Against Child Abuse.
I forget what the total name is. Let me.
Bikers for Kicking Ass and Taking
Big
Names.
Time. Yeah. That's all I got to say about that.
I don't think I've ever drawn myself doing like a Snoopy dance before.
We will be podcasting the entire time. We will be doing a live stream.
It'll be real exciting when we're all off doing something and nothing's going on. So that's what I would.
Oh, it'll be like the charity table where Joe runs off to go get gas. And
I don't run off to get gas. I run off to the charity art auction. That's kind of the highlight of the con for me.
But we're going to have a live stream the entire time the convention is going. I have lined up. We're going to actually be doing interviews live on the internet, and then they will be available online afterward. But we're going to have Trina Robbins. We're going to have Angel Medina. I'm lining up some other people. Those are the first two people who've gotten back to me that they want to sit down and spend some time jaw-jacking with me.
And, of course, if you're a creator and you're interested, get a hold of Corey, and he'll slot some time for you to sit down. And what would be the best way to get a hold of you, Strode, besides the neck and vital organs?
Just email me at solitarerosenetwork@gmail.com. That is the email address for the entire Solitaire Rose Network. All of these podcasts that we're doing.
Neat.
And now that we're done talking about our sponsors, and Joe has worked in the Spring Con plug, I don't care. I'm just calling it Spring Con, by the way.
Yes,
I don't care.
Okay. Old habits die hard.
You can't stop me. You can't
stop
me.
We're not going to try.
No help.
As well you shouldn't.
No one is trying to stop you from doing anything.
Oh, wait till Butch gets here. Oh.
We talk about what Joe's been doing on the eBays.
While no encyclopedia covering ongoing periodical literature can ever be truly complete, the multi-volume set known as the World Encyclopedia of Comics by Maurice Horn is pretty damn close. And the reason I mention it, because not only are we talking about comics out of print and things like that, I just sold my copy of the 1999 edition, which was a beautiful book. I mean, it weighs in at about 8 pounds. Just fantastic. And Horn, who's an internationally recognized comic authority, he did a staggering overview that included obvious newspaper strips, superheroes, as well as underground, independent, and other international titles. You can get the hardcover for way below the $50 asking price. Can't get it from me, though, because I sold mine on eBay. If you want to see what you can get, of course, just go to Crazy or check out the website for this here podcast. Which is, Corey?
What?
Now he's not
paying. Now he doesn't pay. I give him a chance to plug his website, and he's busy, you know, abusing gerbils.
Actually, I'm looking into the Wi-Fi connector that we're going to need.
Yes. So.
Because you reminded me of
it.
Yep.
And
nobody's paying attention episode.
Nobody's really. This is kind of the episode for just not paying attention.
Yeah.
Now, did Corey link you and your websites on his magical Solitaire Rose Network?
I don't know.
Yes, there's a link to her stuff.
There's a whole tag just for episodes that I'm in, so I can link to that one.
See? We take care of things here.
We take care of things. That's right.
We know what we're doing. And you know what else we're doing?
What are we doing?
We're freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
DC Comics, what the fuck?
Oh, Christ.
I'm going through my previews, and I'm thinking, okay. And, I mean, to be fair, somebody warned me they were going to pull this bullshit, but I didn't believe it. And I get to it, and it says, DC Rebirth. Oh, cool. DC Rebirth is coming in June, and to celebrate that momentous event, all of DC Entertainment products for the months will be solicited in a standalone catalog called DC Previews. They give you a freaking list, but absolutely nothing in previews for them. Boy, my enthusiasm to actually order any DC Rebirth is at zero. I mean, granted, it may change once I see this mystical DC Previews. Now, of course, for those of us who buy our stuff online, that means I'm going to have to go online and look at them as I go through it. But really, DC, you screwed the pooch on this one. You could have put it out. You didn't have to wait for a freaking Comic-Con. I think, Corey, I sent you a link about some guy who talks about that where he says there's a... Oh, hang on a second. Let me just find the... Come on, Windows 10. Oh, yeah, now you're going to crash. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Now he's crashing.
Sean Murphy drops the truth on comics going ongoing money problems. And it's a giant article, but one of the things, I think I gave it to you, Corey, either on your website or somewhere, but he talks a bit about the problem is now all the comic people want to have their big event comics where they announce everything now and get everybody all excited. And but the problem is retailers only exist in what am I ordering 2 months from now versus what I'm ordering, what I'm getting in the shop this week. How many people are still waiting for All-Star Wonder Woman? Holy cow, they announced that thing and people went crazy. I remember way back in a DC show, Barry Windsor Smith is going to do a date with Superman. It's going to be really cool. Never came out. They announce these things, they get all this great press, but then it never delivers. So you get everybody all excited about it. Meantime, here they're doing this big rebirth, and if I was a guy doing previews, hell, if I was a retailer doing previews, you're telling me now instead of having 4 weeks to order your damn books, you're giving me two. You know, DC, what the fuck? Oh. That, yeah, I got nothing else to freak on. Jen, what are you freaking on?
Oh, my goodness. Where's my little piece of paper I wrote the notes on? Well, we already talked about the car. I'm in the process of untangling the horrendous mess that is my finances from the last year, which is a nightmare. Can I wax a little philosophical for a second?
Of course.
Okay, because as you know, I've spent the last year, more than a year, like a year and a half now almost, on this like personal journey. Where I've really made a conscious effort to become a better person. You know, I'm in therapy now. I'm finally tackling my anxiety issues, which are the primary driver when I start to act like an asshole. It's usually because I learned the word catastrophizing. Is that right?
Yes,
because what happens is when I get very upset about something and I'm allowed to stew on it, my thoughts kind of spiral out of control, and then I reach these completely insane conclusions based on that, and then I act on these insane conclusions, and it makes sense to me at the time, but it makes no sense to the people on the receiving end of this. They just think I'm an asshole. And then after it has passed, I usually am filled with a horrible sense of guilt and regret, which is what I've been wrestling with for the last, 3 months now. So I kind of, I've been getting a lot of advice, some of it solicited and some of it unsolicited, and really been taking a lot of feedback and trying to listen to other people and what they think I should do and what's good for me. And I finally, at one point in the last week or so, have just decided, fuck all of that. it's this year has been just one decision, not all of them, but some major decisions that I'm really regretting, and a lot of it had to do with other people kind of influencing my thinking. So I've decided to throw that all out the window. Jin's gonna gin, and just do what I want to do for a little while and see if that works out better for me. So that's kind of a freaking, I guess, because, you know, I'm if you see me acting weird, you know, if you wonder what the hell is she up to, I'm going to be me and just damn the consequences, because I've tried doing what I thought was the right thing and what I thought was what I should do, and all I've done is hurt people and make myself miserable in the process. So damn the torpedoes. I'm doing what I want to do. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Full speed ahead.
Full speed fucking ahead. That is right. I am back. sort of. Corey, what are you freaking on?
I was going to say, Jen, if you care,
if I care,
Corey. Yeah, if you don't.
I will. You know what? I do want to be a better person a little bit. So, Corey, what are you freaking on?
Last night, I had a breakup.
Left hand or right hand?
Fear the Walking Dead.
Ugh.
It's not me, it's you. Your characters are all one-dimensional and tiring. Your plots are slow and boring. Your ideas are rehashed and predictable. And everything I like about Walking Dead is what they get wrong with Fear the Walking Dead. It's over. We're done. We're done. I don't care if somebody else wants to watch the show, but I can't do it anymore because last night was 50 minutes of annoying one-dimensional people arguing on a boat.
Just like all of TV.
This is supposed to be a zombie show. This is supposed to be horror. And instead it's, oh, well, these people's relationship is in bad shape. And this person's mad about this. And this guy has daddy issues. And it's all on a yacht. And it's, I don't care. I don't care. By the end of the episode, I wish that the zombies, the swimming zombies, would just come up on the boat and eat everybody and they start over. So, done. I tapped out. I just put up a picture on the Crazy Comics and Stories Facebook page. Joe, Jen, could you please go and look at that picture, please?
Oh, okay. Hang on.
Dude, I was looking at zombie porn.
What?
That does not surprise me in the least.
Instead of the clothes falling off, it's like an arm or something?
Pretty much. Or worse, it goes back on. What in the flaming blue hoodie is that?
Jen, do you see the picture?
Hang on, I gotta look up your page. There's so much stuff on my Facebook.
Okay. Wacky Raceland.
This is DC's reimagining of the Hanna-Barbera cartoon, Wacky Races.
This is not a thing that anyone needed in their life.
This is everything that is wrong with modern comics.
Is that a dog? What am I looking at here?
That is a dog.
What's on its head?
Armor.
This picture, like, okay, this picture, I can't... This picture is a failure, because aside from, like, why does this even exist? It just looks like a muddy mess of body parts with, like, a helicopter behind it. I can't even tell what's going on.
By the way, the dog is obviously Muttsley. You know, the dog that would... in old cartoons.
Uh-huh.
They've taken a children's cartoon that was really basically just, well, we want to keep using these Hanna-Barbera cartoons, so let's put together a race story every week because we could get gags out of races, and turned it into this fucking abomination. I didn't mind when they said we're going to update Scooby-Doo and make it more realistic.
I was about to say, this reminds me, wasn't there just a thing about Scooby-Doo? They were trying to make it kind of more realistic.
This is the next part. And the one with Johnny Quest updated. Well, Johnny Quest was an adventure show that was aimed at adults. I could see. This is everything that's wrong. This is horrible. The art is ugly. The idea is stupid. And why would you take Yogi Bear and Dastardly and Muttley?
It's like a basket.
And Penelope stop and turn him into this shit.
Dude, this is like my favorite page of this story so far. Sorry.
So, Joe, pull us out of this tailspin and tell us what you're geeking on.
Hang on a second here. I got a game we can all play.
They're going to do a great reboot of Tailspin? Because I kind of liked that show.
All right, everybody, describe your butthole using a movie title.
No.
Did you post that? Because I just saw that in my Facebook.
No, I saw somebody else did. And I just
somebody else
was...
who posted that, because I just saw that.
No. No, I won't. No.
Oh, come on.
I don't want to talk about buttholes.
Jeez. I hate that word. It's so vulgar.
It is. I mean, you got to admit, when we went over to Corey's last week, we went over, me and Butch, and we went over to his house, and then we just sat there and farted for like 3 hours, you know? I mean, that's just, that's friendship. You know what I'm saying?
I'm so disappointed I missed that.
I am so glad that Jen called so that I could leave and miss that part of it.
Anyways, geeking. You guys would not believe my basement. It's been cleaned and organized.
I saw some of that.
What?
I know.
Yeah, my daughters and my wife came downstairs with me because you know what happens is I start cleaning something and I get to, I don't know what to do with that. And then I just sit down and, you know, look at superhero porn for a while. But
you and your porn.
They helped me get almost, if not organized, at least clean. I mean, you can walk the length of the place. You can look at stuff on the shelves without having to move other shelves away from it. It's just wonderful. And I got to tell you, I thank them from the bottom of my heart. And I'm telling you, there's nothing sexier than watching women move comic boxes. Oof. let's see.
Somebody pay me to watch me move boxes.
No, comic boxes.
Comic boxes. Okay.
They weigh about, 70 pounds a piece?
Oh, never mind.
No.
I'm out.
Oh.
No, they don't weigh that much.
Yeah, well, it depends on how you pack them. I mean, you put those aforementioned
you fill them full of bricks.
Yeah, really.
Fill it full of hardcovers.
A couple kudos to celebrities. I was reading online. Patrick Stewart, apparently for a Make-A-Wish Foundation, a young girl who was 9 who had cancer, went to the Make-A-Wish Foundation and had no idea. Patrick Stewart got wind that this young lady was there, and he made an effort to see her. Big hugs, big smiles. He told her, "You are one of the few people who can call me Patrick, not Sir Patrick, like the rest of us." It was just great. The parents report that she's been really just bouncing off the walls and real positive.
Did he cure her cancer? I have to ask.
No, that's God's job.
He's Patrick Stewart. Come on.
Well, you don't know.
You tell me, he doesn't just cure cancer with touch?
It could happen. The other celebrity is Steve Tyler. The story goes where there was a kid with Down syndrome and really wanted to go see Journey in concert. I think it was up in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken.
Steven Tyler is Aerosmith.
Aerosmith. What did I say, Journey?
I was going to say, that's a pretty good kick in the balls. Hey, Steve Tyler, can you get me in to see Journey?
He went to go see Journey. Oh, yeah, he went to see Journey.
This is my dream.
I would feel bad if someone wanted to see Journey.
I would feel bad if someone wanted to see Aerosmith.
Well, the kid felt bad because he couldn't get tickets because, you know, nowadays you buy tickets online and poof, they're gone in like 4 seconds. He happened to go to the same pharmacist. Steve Tyler was there to get a brace. I don't know if it was like a back brace or knee brace that the kid had to go to get his meds at. And he recognized him and he went up and Steve gave him a big hug and he said, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you. I couldn't go to the show." And Steve's like, "Well, why not? What's sold out? Tell you what, you're coming and you're going to be backstage pass." And then while the kid was there at the backstage, Steve had him come out and sing a song with him. I think he just gave the kid maracas or something. But it's on YouTube and it's just fabulous. I mean, I love stuff like that. I loved it when Ron Perlman took the time to dress up in his Hellboy gear to go visit a sick fan. Just fantastic stuff. You know, you always read and hear about the Kardashians. Screw them. You know, these are the celebrities you definitely want to pay attention to. Saw the trailer for Suicide Squad. Interest rising. And I finally got to sit down and read some comics. Speaking of books that I have no idea if they're ever going to do again, I got Volume 2 of Copperhead. I talked about this a while back. It's kind of a cross between a Western and Space Odyssey, because it takes place on a distant planet in that. It says it's a hit series. It says it's the second volume. It ends on a cliffhanger. Let me see. When was this? This thing was published last year, and I have yet to see any sign that Volume 3 is on its way. But as it is, I enjoyed it for what it was. Out of the box right away, I got 2 issues of Knights of the Dinner Table. The story is just crazy. It's just a slice of life story. It's not even good art, as Jolly will even admit to, the creator of it. But it's just compelling reading. I just love doing it. Other stuff I read, Invincible Iron Man 7 I'm enjoying. Old Man Logan, it's getting to me, but I'll follow it, see where they go. Got to read Spider-Man 1 and 2. That's with Miles Morales. And I got to say, I'm almost enjoying this Spider-Man more than Amazing Spider-Man. Because it's almost like he's back to the way Spider-Man was when he was a kid.
A whiny bastard?
No, this kid ain't whiny at all. He actually enjoys being Spider-Man.
What?
Doctor Strange 6, of course, starts the last days of magic, which is phenomenal.
Oh,
and if you stop and think about it, it really has a lot of consequences for the rest of the Marvel Universe. Whether they play out or not, we'll see. I mean, whether you're talking Juggernaut, band of, was it
the Crimson Band of Kretorak.
And Scarlet Witch and all the other guys. The other one, I got issues 1, 2, and 3 of the Infinity Entity, which is Adam Warlock. This kind of takes place between the Thanos graphic novels and itself is being solicited as a graphic novel, which had I known, I probably wouldn't have bought the issues, but either way. Batman, Teenage Mutant, I'm having a good time here. Hang on, I need a drink of something. Batman, Teenage Mutant, Ninja Turtles. Number 3. I'm enjoying the heck out of this crossover. It's a lot of fun. The creators know both. Wow. Good air.
I don't think she could do that.
I can't do that.
Nice. Drinking.
Jen has a drinking problem.
Yep. IDW is doing a series of one-shots called Deviations. I read 2 of the 4. 5, I'm sorry. The first one was Ghostbusters. It goes off the idea in a world where the Ghostbusters never cross streams. And you can kind of get an idea what's going to happen because the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, a.k.a. Gozer, is sitting on a building looking very depressed. And in the foreground are our four heroes looking maybe not Egon. He's looking kind of curious, but they're also looking depressed. It's a quick one-shot. If you know Ghostbusters, this is a lot of fun. If you ever saw the Transformer movie, you can read the Transformer one. One shall stand, one shall fall. Optimus Prime and Megatron duel to the death, and only one shall survive. But this time, Hot Rod did not get involved, leading to Optimus's death. Lest I bore Corey anymore, I will save talking more about this one when Dan joins us. But again, if you got a friend who likes Transformers, the other three I haven't read.
Yes, guys.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, X-Files, and G.I. Joe. So it's just a quick one-shot. IDW does these very well. And the final thing that I'm geeking on, in terms of at least comic-wise, Alter Ego number 138. And it has a talk with one of my favorite writers, Harlan Ellison, versus the Monster Society of Evil. And Corey borrowed me his hardcover book, which is really the only way you'll ever get to read it these days. And after reading halfway through this Alter Ego, that's going to be the next thing I'm going to read here and just wade through that book. So really looking forward to that one. Jen, what are you geeking on? What's got you rolling?
Well, there's the new car thing, which is both freaking and geeking, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show before you stole my thunder.
Thunder, Shazam!
Are you done?
No.
Never.
Go ahead and finish then. All right.
Boom. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. I am under 120 pounds now. I recently squeezed into a pair of size 6 jeans for like the first time in ever. I don't even own any. I was at the Goodwill, like trying to find new pants. What did I can't even read my own writing. What does this say? I give up. I can't even read that. Oh, yeah. It's because I have no appetite. Yep. I haven't been eating, which is surprisingly effective for losing weight. I either have no appetite or I eat and immediately get sick. So, yeah, I've been kind of a mess. That's not a secret at this point. I finally cracked $500 on my Patreon, so that's pretty awesome. Heading towards that $1,000 a month goal now. That's, I'm sure, going to take me forever, but, you know, living the dream. So that's about it, I guess. I've been pretty productive again, though it's come at a pretty heavy cost, because I either work when I'm really, really happy or really, really sad. There's not a lot of in-between, so pick one. But I've been drawing, so that's good. I'm geeking about that.
I prefer the happy.
Yeah, I would too, but that's not in the cards right now. But, you know, I mean, I'm paradoxically, like, happy that I'm doing stuff, even though the motivation for doing stuff is pretty miserable. So it's a mixed bag. Like, oh, I don't know. Flip a coin. How do I feel today? But I actually, like, I think this is some of my best work. So I don't know if you would agree, but I've been really happy with, like, the page layouts and the pacing and you know, the storytelling. So it is what it is. What are you geeking on, Corey?
There was one good thing about Fear the Walking Dead last night.
You quit watching it?
They had an ad for Preacher. In this ad, Tulip was fighting someone in the back seat of a car, and she had jammed the gas pedal down as they're going through a cornfield. And for that 60 seconds, I was on the edge of my seat. I was excited. You know how when you watch something, didn't you remember when you watched Mad Max and you were gripping the handles of the theater, you know, the armrests, because it was just so exciting?
Yeah, that was when I learned that the term sitting on the edge of your seat is a literal thing.
Yes, that's how I felt watching this. I want Preacher to start now. If it's half as good as this ad, this is going to be fun. So I may have to actually go back and read all those Preacher trades again. Not that that's a bad thing, because that is one of my favorite series ever. With the Marvel app, and getting back into the Marvel Unlimited, I have caught up on the new series of Nova. And I know that there are a lot of people who are still all butthurt that Richard Rider is no longer Nova, and now it's a young kid. But the story is really good. The art is aimed at younger readers, but it's one of those books where I think a younger reader can enjoy it, but an older reader who knows more about the Marvel Universe and brings more to it can also enjoy it. Its sales aren't that great, but it is going to be leading into one of the Civil War crossovers. So as long as the quality stays up, I'm really excited about that. And the comic that I talked about in the last podcast, I did finish reading, and it probably is going to get my highest recommendation when the trade comes out, and that is a comic called We Can Never Go Home. And as I talked about in the last episode, it starts as kind of this, you know, kind of a typical teenage superpower drama. A girl discovers that she has superpowers. Things start to go horribly wrong. The next issue, the world opens up a little more, and you find out that there's more going on than just this one thing. And by the fifth issue, they've created this entire world. But in all of that, it's still a story with a beginning, middle, and end. It comes to a solid conclusion. They don't need to do any more. The creators have already been picked up by Marvel and other companies. So this is one of those books where the creators put it out and their careers have just exploded. But it's called We Can Never Go Home. I highly recommend it. Once it's out in trade paperback, I'm probably going to be hyping it in the podcast and on the page itself. I'm really, really excited about this, and I can't wait to see what the creators do next. Believe it or
Fast
not,
and
kids.
The Furious.
Huh?
That's my butthole using a movie title. You got it. No one else is going to play. I'm going to play.
I'm not playing that game.
Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Really?
And really? As we say every week.
You're a liar. This is 1 hour and 25 minutes.
By the time we get to your music.
Well, don't forget, we've also got the ads that were put in. I'm clocking in at an hour 35.
And
so
that's just him talking. That doesn't include you and me.
That's right.
Okay.
And as we say every week, the comic that we like the best, the comic that we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like
and
the most.
And we managed to make Corey mess up.
You do that every
time.
Yeah,
you know what else, too? At the beginning of the episode, you said the other end of the series is Tubes and Wires, but you left off that we call the Internet.
But anything else?
I wanted to point that out, but then Joe started like his like 5-minute monologue or whatever the hell that was, and so I never had a chance to interrupt.
The deep.
You're not going to be impressed that I was paying attention?
Anything else you need to point out that I've screwed up? Joe?
The color purple.
Anything that you want to point out that I've screwed up?
I'm sorry, I'm still working on movie titles.
The color purple? Seriously?
You might want to see a doctor about that, Joe.
If that's been noted.
Joe?
The Wiz. Oh, sorry.
What?
If you have an apple and I have an apple and we exchange these apples, then you and I will still each have one apple. But if you have an idea and I have an idea and we exchange the ideas, then each of us will have two ideas. George Bernard Shaw. Jin?
Hit my music, boys.
Well, that wasn't enthusiastic. Come on, give it to us. Really give it.
Hit my music, boys.
We're going to dance. We're going to dance. We're going to dance. And have some fun.